Really, the fastest internet I've ever had was in Siberia.
I don't even know how to respond to that.
I don't either.
Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom, the Digital Architect, Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Hey, listener, welcome back to another episode of Smart Brand Marketing. If you listened to last week's episode, you know that I am in the midst of filming a documentary. It is meant to show that there is a different life script that a lot of us follow, and you can choose how you will live your life. At this point, we have over 30 hours of footage. We are starting the editing process, and I'm almost burnt out. Very long days and not enough sleep will tend to do that. On this week's episode, I have someone that also wrote her own script. Along with her husband, she sold all of her belongings and left the US a few years ago. Enjoy. What made you leave the States in the first place?
Well, a few things happened. First of all, we've always loved travel, but the big thing that set us off on this path was the fact that my 35-year-old brother had a heart attack. And not too long after that, our good friend Maria, whom I know has been on your show as well, she suffered a brain aneurysm. And both of those people were 35. And at the time, we were 37. And we looked at each other and said, holy cow, you know, we may not even make it to our 40th birthday. So why in the hell are we waiting to live our big dream? And so we decided to follow our dream of traveling the world. And it took us about 2 years to sell everything that we owned, save up the money, and hit the road.
Wow. So two people at 35, do you think that was stress or?
I think part of it was genetic. Part of it is just stuff you can't, you know, I mean, if you have a brain aneurysm, you can't really, you know, do anything about that, I guess. But I think what it really showed us more than anything is that you don't have any control over things like that. You don't know how long you're going to be on this planet. So by putting off the things that you say that you want to do until later, well, you know, later's not guaranteed. The only thing you have is now.
So did you have a business before you left? Did you just save up money and hope for the best? How did you guys work this out?
Well, what we first did is saved a bunch of money because at the time I was working as a small business consultant. My husband was working in product marketing for Microsoft. And, you know, we had really good jobs, stable career. We had a house, a car, all kinds of things. And it took a while to get rid of that. But as you're getting rid of it, you know, there's this worry, you know, how are we going to pay for our lives? And when we're done traveling, when we come back, how are we going to do that? So we did. We just saved a ton of money and got rid of everything so we would have nothing to worry about while we were gone. We didn't have to rent out our house or anything like that. We just got rid of it all. And we didn't plan on continuing this. We left on October 1st, 2010, and we just planned on traveling for a year or two. Basically, we just kept saying until the money ran out. And then we started going. And after about 6 months, we thought, we don't ever want to go back. Not go back to the US, but not go back to that way of life. We wanted to keep traveling. We wanted to keep exploring and living the way we were. And so we just started thinking, how can we make this last? And that's when we started finally writing the books and creating the courses and doing the things, answering all the questions that people had been asking us all that time. And so far, that's what's keeping us afloat now, still.
Tell me a little more about that transition, because that's really interesting. So at some point, you must have started laying some kind of foundation out so that you can build some kind of business on top of it, maybe learning some skills to build this out, right? Because to move from living on savings to actually making money online, there's something that happens there. It's like a mind state change, and there's got to be some kind of a skill that forms that actually allows you to do that.
Well, first of all, my husband Warren and I were both really type A gung-ho kind of people. And so when we decided to make this big life change, you know, in those 2 years where we were saving and downsizing, we started a website the next day. So we had people following us from almost the very beginning of this adventure. So they heard how, you know, what we were going through. You know, I'm the pack rat. Warren's the one who wanted to get rid of everything. They were with us through all of those adventures, through all that stress, through all that working through to make our dream happen. And then we started traveling. They were still with us as we were, you know, learning to get along together, learning to depend completely on each other because we're both sort of hard-headed. So by the time this decision came about, we had had people asking us for a long time to share more information on how we made these things happen, especially at 40, and how we transitioned out of successful careers without totally stressing out. And, you know, so we had all of these questions. And I think that's one of the greatest things that someone can do is start to be very public about how you're living your life and what you're doing and what your passions are, because people will start asking questions, and that will give you some kind of indicator as to what you can do with the skills that you have, you know, and it also starts building the audience who's going to buy those products later on.
What did you do initially to build the audience? Did you promote to your friends, family? Did you do some kind of advertising?
Everything that we've done so far has been organic. So we started just with our friends and family, but that's one of the skills that Warren and I have, is that we're both really good networkers. We've always had a large group of friends and business colleagues, and we're really good at staying in touch. So I would say that that started it, because we do, you know, have a big network. But the second thing is that people are interested in that. So they would share it with their friends. And before long, I mean, the first time you have someone comment on a post on your website and you're doing it just for fun, and it's someone you don't know, you think, oh my gosh, how did that person get here? And it's funny the way it happens, but that's really what it is. I mean, people are interested in other people doing the things that they dream about.
What tips do you have for staying in touch? Because that's really hard when you're networking with so many people, and then you forget some of them, you want to keep up with some of them. It's just a really tough thing to do systematically.
Well, I think what I do is, well, I calendar a lot of it. So if I talk to someone, I know that I want to reach out to them maybe again in 2 months, say someone who's close, but not that close. And I'll put something in my calendar, and I'll actually put, you know, follow up on how her mother's doing, how this new business project is going, how the weight loss is going, you know, whatever it is that we talked about. And I know that that sounds really kind of cold and heartless, but to me, it is the warmest way to be a friend, because it shows that I care enough about that person to want to remember what we're talking about and to schedule a follow-up so that I'll remember to call or email or Facebook or whatever it is that I need to do to stay in touch with that person. And when it's important for you to build these kinds of communities, it's easy to turn that into a habit. It's really easy to turn it into a habit.
I've seen you publish 3 books so far.
Yeah, 4 books. Uh-huh.
4 books, okay. And I've seen they're on different topics. One was more of a book for women, one's on clutter, one's on relationships. How do you come up with the content, and how do you come up with the personal brand so that it still kind of ties everything together when you try to market these things?
This is kind of our headache, because sometimes I think we haven't done it as well as we could, but ours is basically grown out of the change that we've been through. So if you look at it from a calendar perspective, the first book that we wrote was about how we got rid of everything. People were fascinated more so with us getting rid of everything we owned than they were that we were going on a trip around the world. I was so surprised that people are, they just can't imagine not living with stuff. And it was such a popular topic that we wrote a series on our blog, and people kept asking about it. So I turned it into a little free ebook kind of a thing, and more people downloaded it. And then we turned it into a book, and people bought it, and they still buy it every month, all the time, from Amazon. So we put that out there and thought, okay, that's fine. We don't want to be declutter experts. That's not who we are. We're all about freedom and whatever we can do to help people get that. So the next thing I wrote was a book about confidence and saying what you wanted for women. And this came, again, after something traumatic happened to someone that I know in her 30s. A friend of mine was actually killed by her ex-husband. And it was an ongoing conversation we had been having about standing up and saying what you wanted in the world so that you could have it, that if other people don't know that, you're not going to get it. And so that's what that book came from. And then after that, people wanted to know, how did you make this life transition? How did you financially, logistically, emotionally do all this? And that's where Dream Save Do came from. And then our latest book, the one that I think is the most fun, is about our adventure around the world and the things that we've learned about love. It's called Married with Luggage, What We Learned About Love by Traveling the World. And it is, it's just a fun, adventurous book with a little bit of the lessons that we've learned along the way. And so I would say that our catalog comes from the life that we live and the things that we do and the questions that our readers ask us, the things that they want to know about the life experience that we're having.
When you create content for your website as well, because you have a podcast, right? You actually, yes, write blogs.
Yes.
So that's a lot of content. So how do you come up with all this stuff constantly and still, I guess, keep things exciting for people? Because you obviously you want them to keep engaged and coming back.
We do, but I think that's why it's good that we have a little bit of the difference. So our brand is called Married with Luggage, and that implies a lot of things. You know, it's us traveling, it's us dealing with our baggage amongst each other, it's us journeying through this life together. So that encompasses a lot of things. Lately on the podcast, we've been talking a lot about deeper subjects on relationships. We've gone into a lot about sex and communication around those areas, and that's not something that we've ever really gotten into before. And I thought we would lose quite a few followers. I really did. And to my surprise, we've gotten a lot more followers. And you have to realize that my market is couples and women in their 40s. I mean, we're not broadcasting this, you know, to 25-year-old men. So I wasn't sure how it was going to go. But I think that's what we continue to do, is answering questions from readers, looking at what's going on in the world, and seeing how it relates to the brand that we have and the audience that we have and what they might be thinking about it, and then creating content around that. So it's really an ever-evolving kind of a thing for us.
Yeah, you just said that you defined your audience as women in their 40s. Is that what you started with when you were doing this project, or is that something that you just learned by engaging with your audience after some time, that that's who's listening and then reading your stuff?
That's what we learned over time. We didn't initially start. Initially, like I said, we didn't really have a plan. I mean, we were just writing about what we were doing and sharing our experience. But what came out of all of that, by looking at both the emails that we get, looking at the people on our email list, looking at the statistics that we get through Facebook and other sites, is that the people who follow us are mostly women in their 40s and above, and couples, and women who are leading the charge in making changes in their relationships. So maybe their husbands don't listen, but they listen through their wives, kind of a thing.
So what do you recommend for someone that's starting out and they want to find their niche, find the audience, really define who's listening to them as quickly as possible and who they should talk to when they're first just all over the place and they're still looking at all the external stuff and copying other people's blogs? You know how it is in the beginning.
Well, I would say think about what you have to offer and who would most be interested in it. And then think about that in terms of the long term. I mean, these are people that you're going to be talking to for years to come. So can you imagine yourself engaging with this group for years to come and providing value and enjoying it yourself? Because that's the thing. You can pick a market. Say I picked 25-year-old men, or, you know, 65-year-old retirees, whatever group that I chose, if I wasn't going to enjoy talking to them, and if I wasn't going to enjoy creating content for them, or that I even could, it's not going to last very long. And that's the thing, the mistake I think some people think about their businesses, especially internet-based businesses, is that you only have to think about it for a while. And while that's true, and I'm okay with short-term businesses and short-term projects, if you're looking for something long-term, you have to think, will I still be enjoying this in 5 or 10 years? Can I provide value for that long for that audience?
So it's kind of like, think if you can be on stage in 5 years talking about this topic, right? So I actually had this conversation, and this one guy was thinking about going into the dildo business. And then he looked at himself and said, well, in 5 years, do I want to be on stage talking about these things? And even though there was money in it, he said, no, thank you.
Well, you know, it's true. And it's funny that you say that. One of the women we interviewed for our podcast about 6 months ago, she is considered the dildo queen of Norway. And she is about 40, and she's fantastic. And she has such a passion for this and for sex education for women. And for her, it is the perfect thing. For me, it was perfect for one episode of the podcast.
That's
you
it.
Know, I mean, you just have to know.
So what kind of content brings you the most traffic?
For us, it's always something to do with the kind of things you don't talk about. So for instance, we just had an episode on when your libido doesn't match your partner and how to get through that. When we talk about money, fighting about money, hiding money from your partner, dealing with those kinds of issues, the things that you can't easily talk about amongst your girlfriends or at work, those kinds of relationship issues, those are the most important. And also, people really like when we reveal something that we use to make our lives easier. So for instance, I just wrote recently about themes and how, you know, we use themes in our lives depending on, you know, whether we're traveling or we're working on a project or even now doing the renovation in the house that we bought in Spain. Those are periods of time that we dedicate to one thing because we can't have balance every day. We have balance overall. And that's something that people are interested in because it's easy to convert that idea of themes into your own everyday life without a lot of research and homework. It's an easy thing that people can take with them right away. So those tend to be the most popular things for us, you know, easy things that people can take with them right away, or deep, scary, crazy stuff that they can't talk about with anyone else.
So it seems like uncomfortable topics and stuff that's not safe, it's something that gets you the most listeners.
That is true. And I think it's because over the years, we've built ourselves up as transparent, honest people. We talk about that we fight, we're not perfect, we've had our issues, we've been very open about that. And I think people trust us. As a matter of fact, that's the commentary that we get all the time is, I feel like you're my friends. I feel like I know you. I feel like I could sit across the table from you, have a glass of wine, and talk about these things. And that's what we want people to think whenever they're listening to us. We want to help them. Obviously we can't be friends with every single person that listens to the show, but we want them to feel that way because sometimes, you feel like you're all alone in a situation, especially if you're in a marriage and you feel like you can't talk to your partner about, you know, certain things. It helps to have someone who said, hey, been there, done that. It sucks, but this is how you get through it. Or try A, B, and C, you know, whatever the solution is. I think people really respond to that.
Yeah, I think, though, that when you look at the stats and you're seeing that this type of stuff brings so much traffic, don't you think you start kind of wondering, like, what else can I come up with that's going to be crazy and get more attention?
Well, I think that's maybe is the difference between me being a woman in my 40s and maybe someone else. I have more of a nurturing girlfriend view of this, whereas I want to go a little bit deeper into some of these subjects. And I know that there's interest there. And I know my audience wants to talk more about those kinds of things. I don't feel like I have to go for shock value to continue building it, because for us, it's more of a relationship that we're building with people rather than one-time hits and visits and visitors. And maybe we're completely wrong in all of that, but for us, it's worked. And so that's what we continue doing. So I would say that, you know, we do push into sensitive subjects, but I'm not one of those kind of people that are always looking for the wildest, you know, upworthy kind of things on Facebook. You'll never believe what happened. Just click here. You know, that's just not me.
Could you maybe share with the audience, how does a couple like yourself actually make money online? How does this work? Are you only selling books? Is there some kind of products? Is there coaching? Because I think a lot of people are still just, they don't get it. They don't see how you can make money from it, because they think, yeah, someone sells a couple books on Amazon, but that's not going to pay for anything. It's not a long-term business.
No, you can't just sell a couple of books on Amazon. No, we have 4 books on Amazon, and then we also have a course that was built out of one of our books, the popular book about getting rid of all of your stuff. That we built into a multimedia course, and it sells really well. At this point, we're writing another book and trying something new. And what we found is that when you have more of a catalog, that's when people are more interested in if they read one thing they like, they want to buy all of them. So those work out really well for us. We also have sponsorships for our podcast that works out really well. And we do sometimes do some coaching, but I have to admit it is not something that I want to do a lot of. Most of what we do is what we consider kind of like a power hour. You know, people can, you know, rent our brains for an hour and we talk about, you know, whatever they have going on. I'm not interested in trading time for dollars. I'm not interested in hour by hour coaching. The lifestyle that we've chosen is really not conducive for that. And for us, the big changes that we made in our lives, I don't want to go back to the life we had before and be doing the same kind of chained to the desk 12 hours a day kind of a thing, just in a great location. So it's important to us to build a business that fits the lifestyle goals that we have.
What kind of launch did you have for your product?
We have a course called Declutter Clinic. And it's a 4-week course. It's audio with transcripts and then also weekly videos and checklists and things like that. And plus we have a private Facebook group that goes with it. So we put this together it's been a little over a year ago, and we ran it as a kind of a do-it-yourself course. And it worked out really well because we have a promo for it in the back of our book Which is called Getting Rid of It. And it's the one that sells every single day. You know, we sell several copies of that. And so we get a lot of people who buy the course after reading the book. They feel like they want a little bit more handholding. And then this year we decided to change the course so that it is more of an in-person kind of a thing. We interacted with some other people who do this kind of thing online, and they told us, you know, the way to go is having it start from a certain date, and that you'll get more signups that way. And it'll be interesting to see how that works out, because we're opening it again for registration on October 1st, and the class will begin on October 15th. So this is the first time we've ever actually ran it as a standalone date specific course. So that'll be interesting. But what we did is basically told our story, and we put it out there, and we partnered with other people who have blogs on minimalism and simplicity, and entrepreneurs, people who wanted to travel, any kind of person we could think of that was going to downsize. We also partnered with professional organizers, all kinds of people that we could think of that might be interested. And that's how we did the big launch of our course the first time. Now we've been gathering a waiting list because we closed the class. And so we have a ready-made list of people to email when it's ready to go. And that makes it a whole lot easier to sell.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I find it amusing too that people work so hard to make money, to buy all this crap, and then they go into courses to figure out how to get rid of it.
I think it's crazy too. You know, I told Warren on our last visit to the United States, I was just amazed, because we've been gone for a couple of years, and you don't think you'll forget things in your home country. I mean, I've lived there my entire life, and we're driving around, and the first thing I noticed was billboards, because I don't see those anywhere else, hardly ever. And the second thing was storage buildings. People, like these giant acres full of storage buildings that people are paying to store crap that they don't need. And I looked at Warren and I said, do you think it would be weird for us to have a decluttering course and also buy a storage building business? Because I could see us making a lot of money that way.
Help people declutter and then help them put stuff into the storage. Yeah, that's perfect.
Oh, yeah. But I can't do it. I believe in the decluttering too much.
You can always look at it as just hedging your investment, just in case the wave changes, right? The tide goes the other way.
You're a lot more strategic than I am.
Betsy, where can people find you if they want to buy your books, just find out more about you, listen to your podcast?
You can find everything at marriedwithluggage.com. There are links to buy the books, links to get to the podcast, links to get to the course, and everything else that you could find out about us.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please help out by leaving a review in iTunes, and don't forget to hit the subscribe button. If you have any questions, hit me up in the comments on smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect, Liebelt. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.